is fortunate to have a local FM radio station, KPIP, which is the flagship program of a nonprofit organization, International Educational Resources for Rural Missouri, or IERRM, whose mission is to cultivate and nurture community educational radio in and around Fayette. In addition to offering content developed elsewhere, KPIP is proud to feature local programming and look to area residents to offer their perspectives on topics of interest to them and their friends and neighbors. The following programming does just this, as it engages local citizenry who are the experts on the area's history because they have lived it. This series is called Howard County Remembers and builds on work done when the county celebrated its 200th birthday in 2016. That year, a fine publication entitled Howard County, Missouri, From Prairieland to Promised Land, A Remembrance Across Two Centuries, was released. This radio series embellishes on the extensive information contained in that book, which may be found at the Howard County Public Library. To back up, though, the genesis of these programs was inspired by this year's celebration of the state's bicentennial. While Howard County was organized by an act of the General Assembly of the Territory of Missouri in 1816, it was followed 5 years later in 1821, when Missouri was recognized as a state by the United States Congress, making 2021 Missouri's bicentennial year. We decided to tie together these two historically close occasions by focusing on aspects of Howard County's history and keep these in KPIP archives, as well as offer audios of the broadcast to the State of Missouri Historical Society to keep in its archives. Today's episode is number 8 in the 12 programs comprising the Howard County Remembers radio series. It is called Strong Women, Farm Women, and features an interview with Laura Corte, a modern-day farmer in Howard County, and is conducted by Jane Krigler, the Howard County Remembers Project Coordinator. Laura, a lifelong resident of Howard County, lives in Fayette with her husband Matt and their young son Alex. Her mother's family has been farming in Howard County for at least 6 generations. Laura grew up in the Richland neighborhood south of Glasgow, where most of her extended family lived at the time. Her dad is from Cherry Grove, south of Fayette. At one point, Laura grew up in Cherry Grove, right across the road from her paternal grandparents, where her uncle lives now. As a child, Laura and her family did a lot of visiting and storytelling with older relatives. Listen in as Laura Corte regales us with tales about the women in her family with Howard County Remembers Strong Women, Farm Women on 94.7 KPIP.
Today, our program is called Strong Women, Farm Women. We'll be hearing from Laura Corte, who is a modern-day farmer and hails from at least 6 generations of farmers. And she's been farming since she was 6, and she can tell you more about that. In this program, she will reminisce about her female forebears on the family farms. She will focus on the amazing and often unheralded roles women played on the farms over time. Laura?
Thank you for having me. My name is Laura Corte. I am a lifelong resident of Fayette. I grew up in the Cherry Grove neighborhood. I attended Cherry Grove 4-H FFA. I was the president of FFA. I have a degree in agriculture from the University of Missouri, and I've been engaged in agriculture most of my life.
Tell us about the women who preceded you.
Well, my family tree is full of quite a few interesting, strong-willed, opinionated women. Even the way my mother's family came to be in this county, part of her family hails from Shonya, Missouri, which is no longer there. Shonya is at the bottom of Lake Wapapello. Our Aunt Ollie was a widow and had come into a sum of money, and the children kept getting sick with the fever, which was malaria, because they lived in the bottoms and they had good ground, but they also had to fight mosquitoes. And so they had 8 children, and they were worried that they were going to lose their children to malaria. And so Aunt Ollie hatched the plan that they would move to Glasgow. So they sold their farm to the government, and they got on the train and they came to Glasgow. They rented a house at Crossroads for a couple years to familiarize themselves with the neighborhood, and then they bought a farm at E Road and 87. And so it was all thanks to Aunt Ollie, who moved us up here. But they used to make 100 biscuits every morning to feed their family. Eventually, the house, it was a huge farmhouse. There was an existing house there, and they jacked it up and put it on logs and rolled it back and set it in place. And then they built an additional house size addition on it that was two stories. And it had 13 people living there. So everyone from Grandma to Aunt Ollie, of course, and then Dolly and Early Wells were the parents, and then their eight children, one of which was my grandfather. And this would have been in the 1910s. My grandmother, Virgie, she was quite the corker. She was my mother's grandmother. She was a little bitty woman, and she was very high strung. And they were farming for Harley Davis, south of Fayette, near the Katy. And she was scared of railroad bums. And my granny was just an infant. And so she made my grandfather, Lester, teach her how to shoot a shotgun. But mostly he was scared of the idea that she was wielding a gun. So they decided that maybe living next to the Katy in 1926 wasn't the best idea. So then they moved to farm another farm.
And can you talk about the different roles that the men on the farm and the women on the farm had? The men didn't make the biscuits.
No. The men ate the biscuits. In my Aunt Irma's house, if men came in the kitchen, they were relegated to very menial tasks, such as snapping green beans or stemming gooseberries or just piddly work that she didn't want to do. And it was all to run them out of the kitchen and onto the side porch where they could relax and not be underfoot, because there was three women, Irma, Avie, and Elmy. And Irma cooked. Elmy bossed everybody around because she was the oldest and she made desserts. And Avie kept the fires going for this huge 3,000 square foot farmhouse with a wood range and fireplaces and stoves. It was her job to keep those fires going. In addition to collecting eggs, raising the garden, and keeping the men out, it was a very circumscribed existence, and they had their own hierarchy and who could do what. And my Aunt Irma is the only person I've ever met that eats watermelon with a fork and a knife.
So the roles carried over to the children as well as the adults?
I'm not certain, because I was a little kid when they were octogenarians. And so you just knew, like when you went to Aunt Irma's, you were going to eat your watermelon with a fork and knife, and that this is the way it was in her home. And they had a huge dining room table that would accommodate 13 people. So even when there was just two little old people rattling around that tremendous house, they still had that dining room table. And so when it was time, she made a big production about it. She would clear the table. She would put newspaper down. She would cut the watermelon. She would put the plates around. And then you would get your slice of watermelon, and your cutlery would be sitting there. And then you'd pass the salt.
Well, now, most of their lives were lived pre-electricity, correct?
Yes.
So 13 people had to be fed, had to use the outhouse, had to get the well water, and was that a male or female? What were the tasks in that, other than the cooking?
Well, the men would cut wood and split it and keep it stocked for the women. I mean, the fires never went out during the winter, and so the women would just feed the fires, keep them going, clean out the fireplaces and the stoves, and take that outside water on the stove for baths. I mean, when you think about the size of a wash tub and how much water you have to heat on a wood range to get mildly comfortable bath in a drafty old farmhouse. They had a summer kitchen. During the summer, all of the cooking moved out to that summer kitchen. The garden was Aunt Irma's domain. Sewing was her domain. She did say, we asked her one time, that electricity was the biggest leap forward in her life, and that they had a friend who was graduating from Glasgow High School, and I think it would have been about the 30s. Since they were on 87, they electrified the main roads first, and then they branched out to the more rural areas. And so they got electricity early, and they knew what day it was going to be turned on. It just happened to be graduation day. And so before they left the house, they went through and they turned on their lights. So when they came back from Glasgow graduation, their house was all lit up, and she said it was just marvelous to look at it.
And were they mainly crop farmers or animal? What did
it was a diversified farm, as most farms around here were. They had crops, but most of the crops were used to feed the animals that they worked with, and then, of course, the cattle and the milk cows. And washing milk dishes was a huge production, too, because you didn't just have the standard dinner dishes or lunch dishes. You had milk strainers and containers and churning butter and the butter mold. And so you didn't have the hottest water in the first place because you were heating it on the stove. And Mom said they ate fried meat and gravy at every meal because, you know, we love gravy. But so she said getting hot water to do the dishes was an ordeal. And it was just one more step in trying to manage a home. And in that family, in my Aunt Irma's family, there were three women and five boys of their nuclear family. So it was great that they had all those men to work in the fields, but that meant that it was a little uneven to keep up with the chores.
And you mentioned to me earlier that the chickens and eggs were kind of under the women's domain.
Yes. Chickens, eggs, turkey, geese, any sort of fowl, and then milking. I don't know if milking the cow itself, I think that was more of a men's chore in most homes, but separating the milk, making butter, those sort of things, or selling milk, if you sold milk to the neighbors, that was all under woman's purvey. And so my grandma Virgie, she was born in 1898, and she had a flock of turkeys, and they were living down on the Spencer Place, which is south of Cherry Grove Rural Schoolhouse. And she would begin to set eggs in the spring in a wooden incubator. And when she got 100 eggs set, then she would incubate them, and she would hatch these poults out. And that was one of her cash crops. Well, it was my granny's job to drive the turkeys to the creek every day to water them. And so it was her job as a young girl to keep this flock of 100 turkeys kind of moving as a unit towards that creek because they were worried that they would just be too flaky to find water on their own. But their rent at the Spencer Place was pretty severe, and their landlords took half of even the turkeys, which was a little bit of an overreach. The egg and turkey and poultry money is kind of considered a woman's household money. It's hers to use her discretion. And so the fact that the landlord took half the turkey money was pretty harsh. And Granny said she always wanted to have turkey for Thanksgiving, and they always had roast beef.
When you talk about it, you say the landlord, that wasn't the landlady. Talk about farm ownership and how it's really under the man's name.
Generally speaking, yeah. Traditionally, land ownership has been passed through sons and not daughters, and it's been generational. And so a lot of the older families that were established, that's how they made money, is that they rented the farm on shares. And so there might have been a tenant house. And so as this lady, if your husband was a tenant farmer, you lived in whatever tenant house you came up with. It could be a good tenant house or it could be a crumbling shack. The dwellings weren't really considered to enhance the value of the property. It was about the intrinsic value of the farm ground, but not the home. And down on the Spencer Place, Granny said they had 16 steps up. That was an old, old farmhouse with the 3-foot wide walls. And so to get into the first story was 16 steps. And so if you think about toting water, toting wood, going out to the chicken house, going out to the garden, you've got 16 steps every time you do that. And my grandmother, Virgie, farmed in a long line bra and stockings. She believed that you should have good posture and that you should have your act together. Mom said even in the 60s, there she was.
Suited up.
Yeah, suited up, cinched up, and ready to go. And she carried her purse like a weapon. I mean, there's pictures of her, and she's always got this, like, mega black bag that looks like it came from a country doctor. I mean, it is a serious purse, and it's like she's ready to whop somebody with it. She was a character. Okay, so I'll have to tell you about my Grandma Virgie and her, I guess it would be her will, her strong will. After they left Spencer's, they went to farm the Rock Springs neighborhood, which is over by E Road and HH is approximately where that's at. It was a very nice home that she had to live in, and it was a very nice farm that my great-grandfather had to work. But there was a problem. The widow lady that owned it liked to come by after supper. And my granny told me that she would pull up in her big fancy car and she would come to the house and she would say, "Lester, I think we should go check the cows." This put my grandfather in a terrible bind because the landlady wanted him to check the cows. And his wife thought it was inappropriate for this woman to keep showing up night after night to check cows. And so this little woman with 8 years of education in a one-room schoolhouse and a long-line bra and a steel will, she started shopping for a farm. And she happened to find a farm that was surrounded by her kinfolk. It was in her neighborhood. And it got them away from being tenant farmers. And it satisfied her husband. He was satisfied that he could farm for himself instead of giving a portion of their crop away to the landowner every year. They were more prosperous when they were farming for themselves. And she was in a neighborhood with all of her extended family. So she really made lemonade that day. My Aunt Irma, she lived at the intersection of E and 87, and she was also in the Richland area. And Richland, the ground for the church was actually given by my family to the community to build a church and a cemetery. And so Aunt Irma and Aunt Avy, it was during the war, and all the men were gone.
Which war?
World War II. They had been practicing driving in the cow pasture. They had a large area in the front of the house where it was off of the road, and it was sort of a lawn. And they used to play baseball on Sunday afternoons there because they basically had a baseball team as a family. Avy and Irma would practice driving. They'd get in the car and they'd bump around the cow pasture. One day it came that she needed to get to the Richland Church to volunteer, and she asked her dad to take her. And he said he couldn't because they were in the fields or something. And he said, "Gentle man, sister, just go and do it." And she did. She took off, and that was her first solo trip. And she drove right up to the end, practically. But she always drove like she was playing the organ at church with both feet. She was dangerous. But she was independent. And so that driver's license and that ability to travel really opened up some avenues that she didn't have, because her sisters went to the ammunition plants in Kansas City, but she stayed home to take care of her mother and father, so she wasn't as worldly as they got to be.
So are any of the farms now still with your family?
They've moved on. My brother lives on the home place for my dad's family. My grandfather was born in Chamoy, but when he was 3, they moved to Ahold Bottom. He lived there until he was 16, and then they moved to Pearson's Mill. They lived down at Pearson's for 5 years, I think, but they just got sick of being flooded. So then, I think it was 39 or 41, somewhere in there, they came to Cherry Grove, and there's no flooding in Cherry Grove. But my grandfather lived there with his father, and then my dad was born at home on that place, and now my brother lives there with his family.
Well, this has been fascinating. Any last words?
My grandmother Bernice was notoriously tight. And she had had her first 2 children in the hospital in town. And she decided that when my dad was born, she would have him at home. So she called the doctor, and he came, and he said, "Oh, honey, you're not quite ready." He went in the kitchen and drank coffee and cut up with my great-grandmother, Wilhelmina. And my grandmother said, "Oh, no, it's time." And she had Dad by herself, and she was mad because she had to pay him full price, and he didn't do anything.
Thank you, Laura. We've heard from Laura Corte, a modern-day farmer, without having to use outhouses and pump the water. But sometime we'll hear about your current life. That'd be a good contrast.
Sure.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Howard County Remembers on 94.7 KPIP. This episode featured an interview with local farmer Laura Corte, entitled Strong Women, Farm Women. It was directed by Jane Krigler and produced by Rachel Steele. I am David Holman. Howard County Remembers has been made possible by the Boonslick Historical Society and is endorsed by the Missouri State Historical Society as part of its bicentennial celebration. Howard County Remembers premieres every second and fourth Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. right here on Howard County's only nonprofit educational radio station, 94.7 KPIP.
I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sisters, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sisters, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Oh, brothers, let's go down, come on down. Come on, brothers, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Oh, fathers, let's go down, come on down. Oh, fathers, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Oh, mothers, let's go down, come on down, don't you wanna go down? Come on, mothers, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown? Good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sinners, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sinners, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown? Good Lord, show me the way.
Again, back to the seasons of my youth. I recall a box of rags that someone gave us, and how my mama put the rags to use. There were rags of many colors, but every piece was small, and I didn't have a coat, and it was away down in the fall. Mama sewed the rags together, so in every piece with love, she made my coat of colors that I was so proud of. As she sewed, she told a story from the Bible she had read about a coat of many colors Joseph wore, and then she said, "Perhaps this coat will bring you good luck and happiness." And I just couldn't wait to wear it, and Mama blessed it with a kiss. My coat of many colors that my mama made for me, made only from rags, but I wore it so proudly. Although we had no money, well, I was rich as I could be. In my coat of many colors my mama made for me. So with patches on my breeches and holes in both my shoes, in my coat of many colors I hurried off to school, just to find the others laughing and making fun of me. In my coat of many colors my mama made for me. And oh, I couldn't understand it, for I felt I was rich. And I told them all the love my mama sewed in every stitch. And I told them all the story mama told me while she sewed, and how my coat of many colors was worth more than all their clothes. But they didn't understand it, and I tried to make them see that one is only poor, only if they choose to be. Now I know we had no money, but I was rich as I could be. In my coat of many colors my mama made for me, made just for me.
Mama never seemed to miss the finer things of life. If she did, she never did say so to Daddy. She never wanted to be more than mother and a wife. She did, she never did say so to Daddy. The only thing that seemed to be important in her life was to make our house a home and make us happy. Mama never wanted any more than what she had. If she did, she never did say so. He often left her all alone, but she didn't mind the staying home. If she did, she never did say so to Daddy. And she never missed the flowers and the cards he never sent her. If she did, she never did say so to Daddy. Being took for granted was a thing that she accepted, and she didn't need those things to make her happy. And she didn't seem to notice that he didn't kiss and hold her. If she did, she never did say so to Daddy. One morning we awoke just to find a note. Mama kept the road and left. I've gone to search for love I need so badly. I've needed you so long, but I just can't keep holding on. She never meant to come back home, but she did. She never did say so to Daddy.